Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, August 8th. I'm Ray Graff. It's gardening today. We welcome Fred Breglia of the Landis Arboretum, Bob Graves of Fatigan's Nursery, and Delilah Riggs of the Berry Patch in Steventown, New York already. So give us a call if you have a gardening question on this rainy day. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us, voxpop@wamc.org. That's the email address, voxpop@wamc.org. Or call 800-348-2551. Tends to be a popular show, the gardening show, so I suggest you do something early, and we'll start the show after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Gardening today, and we welcome back Bob Graves, co-owner of Fatigan's Nursery in Latham, New York, Fred Breglia from the Landis Arboretum. He's the director of the Landis, don't you know? Has a corner office. It's made entirely of pine. That's in Esperance, New York. Delilah Riggs is the owner and operator of the Berry Patch, a first-generation diversified farm in Steventown, New York. We welcome your gardening calls right now. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. That's the email, and the number is 800-348-2551. Well, let's talk gardening, shall we? Bob Graves, how you doing?
Hey, it's not 90 degrees.
It's nice. It's
very
nice.
You can breathe outside.
It feels good.
We've had a little rain, which is not a bad thing. I'm going to have a little more. I'm not sure if that's good or bad, but that heat was just, you know, plants don't like it when it gets hot like that. They just don't.
No, especially for that length of time. Yeah,
it's
usually
weeks.
You don't see it. Yeah, there's usually a break in there, but there's been no breaks. So and it's good to finally get one.
Poor Dale Isle is trying to harvest everything all at the same time.
That's right.
That's correct.
Is that true, Dale Isle?
Oh, yeah. It has made such a compressed season on so many things.
But it'll probably go on and on and on if it stays warm.
No, because you only get X number of blueberries per year, and you know tomatoes always go on until November anyways. Although the heat was actually a problem with tomatoes, we're going to have a gap because tomato plants drop their flowers when it gets too hot.
You're kidding.
No. So it gets above 90 degrees and tomato plants drop their flowers.
And they'll get more.
They will get more, yes.
How are things like squash doing? Are they doing okay this year?
You know, I haven't made it out to that part of the field, but my husband was out there just 2 days ago and said we have a great squash crop coming.
Ooh.
So that's good. Certain types of squash will not set their female flowers.
Well, that's what I was wondering.
When we have hot nights, right, especially, and we had a lot of hot nights.
Huh. But it's only certain types of squash.
Right, right. And some of the giant pumpkins, especially. Yeah. So those crops may be later this year.
So the plants might look good, but they might not have enough.
It might not have that
flowers.
Many fruit, yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Fred Breglia, how are things over at the Landis?
We're doing good. We're getting ready for a 5K race that's coming up this weekend. We've been working on some capital improvements. We've been able to get some grants and purchase a few pieces of equipment that we really needed for a long time. So it's nice to see some of those buildings get improved.
Oh, good.
Coats of paint.
Do you have a corner
roofs.
Office, by the way?
I do.
Do you really?
I do indeed.
And what's
right.
it, what wood is it made out of?
It's in the corner of the woods.
It's whatever, you know, most likely it's a late 1800s house.
Oh,
so
cool.
When you look at those kind of, when you see that kind of wood in homes, it's generally a lot of times whatever it was cut, they were cutting around that area. It could have been hemlock, could have been oak, a mix of the two. We have some beams in there that are like almost 2 feet wide.
Wow.
So really,
strong
really
stuff.
Cool. But it's good to put some new upgrades, and including a new furnace system, an HVAC system, so it has the heating and cooling.
Oh, you gotta love that.
We love it. It's like, and it couldn't have came at a better time with all the heat. So
yes, indeed.
So now my corner office has AC as well as heat.
So that's very good. Well, and you're not gonna run in the 5K?
No, I'm running the 5K with Dave Roy, if he's listening. He's the race director, and he and I are so busy that I don't have time to actually run.
You're overseeing it, but you're not running.
I help
it.
Oversee it, but my son Mike, he's gonna represent Landis Arboretum, so little Mike's
that's
gonna
great.
Run this one this year.
And
so.
But could you run a 5K if you had to?
I've done them in the past.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd rather bike it, though.
Yeah. I'd rather drive it. All right. So we have email, so we'll get going here. The number is 800-348-25. Oh, before we do that, yeah, look at the melons. Del Isla, do tell.
Yeah. So it's melon season, and which is early again this year. We actually harvested our very first melon this year on July 8th.
Wow.
Which is incredibly early for
That's
upstate
really
New York.
Early.
How much ahead is that?
That was about 10 days ahead of last year.
Wow, nice. So almost 2 weeks ahead.
Yes. Wow. So it was amazing. So today I brought in four different types, which is not all the different types.
No,
but
we've
I knew
done
we,
that before.
I knew we only had X amount of space for me to put these on.
What's this one?
So that one is called Sensation Melon.
Oh, I love
and
it.
That is a different type of melon. It's hard to find the seed.
Why?
There's only one seed company that produces it. It's not a standard, you know, it's not a cantaloupe or anything similar.
This is delicious, Del Isla.
That's really good. I think it's pure sugar.
I think they named it really, really
they
well.
They did. Wow.
And then I have a Sugar Rush cantaloupe. And I have an Orangina Tuscan melon, which is a cantaloupe, but the Tuscan melons always have a firmer texture. So think prosciutto and melone in Italy.
Really?
Yep. So they like the firmer type of melons to do that.
And what's the name of this one?
This is called Orangina.
Okay. It says Panzer on there.
That was from the tomato show that you missed.
So they named tomatoes after tank squadrons?
I didn't know.
Panzer divisions?
Apparently. Oh, I didn't know
Rommel
that.
And whatnot? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, delicious.
And
oh,
then a canary
really
melon.
Good.
All right. So we're eating. I'm going to stop eating, and we're going to read some emails. This one came in yesterday. This is from Ruben. I planted a rhododendron this spring. I got many blooms on it this summer. However, I overwatered it, and I think I killed it. All the leaves began drooping and eventually turned dry and brown. There are still a few spots of green at the very ends on a few branches. Should I wait until next spring to see if it comes back or plant a new one this fall?
I think I would wait. You know, it's you got nothing to lose by waiting. Overwatering is sometimes as bad as giving it no water. And
especially,
ironically, the symptoms are about the same.
Yeah, that's the hard part people don't understand. Over and under sometimes looks the same.
Yep.
But what he's got is probably Phytophthora.
I was going
was
to ask
say.
About
it's
that.
It's destroyed, though. He sent a picture, and I printed it, and it printed on like 9 pages. Yeah, so I couldn't bring it in. Otherwise, we have to paste it together on the wall.
They don't usually come back. But again, as Fred said, you have nothing to lose.
Yeah.
But the problem with that, too, is if you've got a rhododendron, Phytophthora is endemic. It's everywhere.
Yep.
If you get a wet situation, you're going to get it. But once you've gotten it, if you put another rhododendron in there, you're most likely going to get it again.
Exactly. I was going to say the same thing. So if you do plant it, you're going to look for a new, ideally a different site.
Yeah.
Or if you want something there, just pick a different genus of plants. And then the Phytophthora is not going to get it. It's only going to get something in the
rhododendron. You can treat for it, but it doesn't work very well.
No, it doesn't. You'd be better off replacing it with something else.
All right. This is from Judy. And Judy also attached a photo, which appeared to be printed by 9 pages, so we're not going to show that to you now. Judy writes, Judy is in Newburgh. The heavy, wet snow we got this winter in the Hudson Valley damaged my arborvitae. Even though I removed the snow right away, the top branches were splayed. I tied the branches as soon as possible and just recently removed the ties. Within hours, the branches went back. Should I tie them together again? If yes, how long do I need to keep them tied up? Will they ever regain their shape?
Yep. So when you see those types of issues with rhododendrons, or I should say arborvitaes, an arborvitae is a single-stem plant, and it shouldn't have 3 stems in there. But a lot of times at nurseries, when they're growing them, they'll have 2 or 3 sprouts. And they'll still, when you buy them, look very much like one single stem conical.
Yeah.
But as they get larger and you get a snow load, if it's not a single stem, you have three, it'll peel right open. And generally, the only way to really keep them in from experience with that is to keep it tied.
It sometimes helps to trim them a little bit, too. Take some of that weight off.
That could definitely help.
And when you trim the upper part or something like that, a lot of times the growth below it will gain caliper, will get stiffer.
That's true. Thicker. Yep. So if you think of this.
A combination of both. I trim it and tie it.
Probably both. Yep. And if you keep the ties kind of loose, it'll be better than keeping them real tight, because if it's real tight, it'll never gain strength and you'll end up, you know.
The movement itself. Is, causes them to develop strength.
Pull that microphone a little more directly in front of you there, where you're a little off axis there. And there you go.
And Bob's point is good. If you're, you think of these stems, each of them is a single lever, and if you push down on a lever out here, it's a lot, you know, further on the end, it's real easy to push it down. But if the lever's short and you're pressing on that lever, now it's hard to press that lever down. So often reduction pruning, it's a lot of, the, you know, similar to even big trees. A lot of times we're talking about reduction pruning, and that's going to help keep things up.
It is the Gardening Show on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number. We have Fred Breglia, Bob Graves, and Dale Isler Riggs with us to answer your calls. 800-348-2551. We'll go to the phones. We'll go. Don't worry if you emailed. We'll go back to the emails in a bit. We'll be back. Vox Pop, Ray Graff with you, 800-348-2551. That's the telephone number. It's Gardening Today, and without further ado, we will go to the phones. In East Greenbush, we start. Deborah, you're on.
Hi, can you hear me?
Ah, yes, I can.
Okay, thanks for being here, guys. So, I have never had a crabgrass problem. This year I do. Is there a product that will hit or diminish established crabgrass? I saw that Gordon's, which is one product, I can't find it anywhere locally. So if you could please give me information on that. And
the simple answer to your question is no. It's very difficult to control established crabgrass. It's just not worth trouble.
Can you pull it up and do anything?
Yeah, but there's so much of it. I mean, it's
You can pull it up. I mean, they're supposed to be annual, correct? But if they seed, then they
It is an annual. It dies in the fall, and then it seeds itself and comes back next year. So traditionally, the best way to take care of that is with a pre-emergent in the spring that prevents the seeds from germinating. But trying to do it post-emergent now, it's just not worth the trouble.
Really?
You got to do it multiple times. The stuff's fairly toxic. I mean, that chemical used to be predominantly an arsenic chemical, and they've taken that away. And
it's just
not worth it. It's just forget it. Get it next year.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I mean, should I ask my gardener to just take it up manually?
No, it's just not worth the trouble. It's going to die.
No return on your investment.
Well, and plus I'll have to be divorced. I mean, I don't think it'll go over that
way. I was going to say.
Speaking of my gardener. You know, we fight the constant battle with these Japanese knotweeds. And we fight, we cut them down, whatever. And it's working over the decades. Our next door neighbor, who also has the problem, we often talk about these knotweeds. She found it. I don't know where she found it, but she dropped off Japanese knotweed honey that she bought somewhere.
Yep.
Is this going to kill us? I haven't tried it yet.
No, opposite.
It's not poison or anything?
Oh, no.
No, really? It actually the pollen from it makes quite sweet, quite good honey.
No
there
way.
There are some people who cultivate that for the purpose of honey.
So there are some benefits to this invasive, and that is that at least pollinators use it, and it definitely makes sweet nectar for sweet honey.
I've got some of it growing near in a hedgerow, and you can't go near it when the bees are there because it's just covered.
Covered.
I don't recall seeing too many bees around it. They like the bee balm and stuff in our garden, but
I've seen a lot.
Yeah, keep an eye on it because when it's in flower, it's covered.
We try to get them before they flower.
Yeah, of course.
Right. So you're not going to. Yeah. They're not going for the leaves. They're really after that. They're after
that
pollen.
Fred's advice all the time is just keep cutting and cutting.
Yep,
and
that's what we do.
Yeah, you wear it down. Smother it where you can.
Unless you're making honey.
But I someone once said, I think it was on this show, that you can eat this stuff. But I,
no, it is edible.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you're the one. Yeah, of course.
It's it's preferred when it's really just a small shoot. Yeah. And it's sort of like asparagus type of thing. But once it gets big.
You never brought that in, right?
I did not.
Did
bring
I pretend
that
I liked it?
No. Not okay. Yet. Not yet. All right, but, good. You know, next year, I like to bring something new every spring.
Listen, Fred, no
that's
problem.
That's a spring harvest.
Fred could feed you anything and you'd try it, you know.
Well, I can tell you one thing. I know what these are in front of us. And these melons are fabulous, Dale Islet. I just had one. What's that? The canary?
That's the canary.
So nice.
Yes.
So light. Yeah. So good. Here, you want to try one, Fred?
It's a lot better than knotweed, I'll tell you that.
Okay, fair enough. Let's go to the next caller here, and we'll go to Morristown. Not sure if it's New Jersey, New York, or what. Bob, where are you?
I'm in Vermont.
In Vermont. Wow, that's one I didn't have on my list. All right, go ahead. You're on the air.
So I have 18 blueberry plants that I've had for going on 18 years. And every couple of years, I compost them with homemade compost. And this year, I used some compost that I've been working on for about 2 years. I put the compost on last fall. The plants are growing like crazy, but I lost my entire crop of blueberries. I had a ton of blueberries, but they turned a pinkish orange and then shriveled up and fell off.
Okay. Well,
what did I do wrong?
Dale Islet, this is you.
That sounds very bizarre. I do wonder what was in your compost.
The only thing different was I added some cow manure, but it's been sitting out there for like 2 years.
Yeah, that.
And I turn it over every couple of months.
That shouldn't have made a difference. I would say in the future for blueberries, since they want acidic soil, I would not use a compost. It's standard practice to use wood chips or sawdust or something like that to help make a more acid soil.
Oh.
The only thing I'm wondering is if you did wind up with some type of pH problem because of that. I've not heard of berries turning, you said pink and then orange?
They're pink. They're sort of a pinkish orange, and then they turn white, and they just shrivel up and fall off.
Wow.
So do they look a little bit like like they're mummies? Are they kind of dried up when they shrivel?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that is most likely a disease called mummy berry. And that is actually affects the shoots early in the spring when the shoots first come out. And then bees actually spread it to the flowers. So that's one case where pollinators are not are doing something that's not super helpful, although you want the pollination. Mummy berry is something that you should try to remove any of the mummies that have fallen off. Sanitation goes a long ways in helping control mummy berry. And you need a dry spring or to make some, there are some fungicides that will help with that, organic fungicides included. And you need to be spraying those plants early in the spring just as those leaves start to come out.
So that wet weather we had this spring is the culprit.
Probably.
Exactly. Yeah.
Combined with that incredible humidity.
Yeah. And especially with you folks in Vermont, with those rains that you've been getting.
Getting again.
And are getting again, unfortunately. Yeah. It's probably wound up being kind of the perfect storm for mummy berry for you. And it will come in from wild berries. So if you have woods around you that have wild blueberry plants, it can be brought in from there. Both the spores blowing in the wind as well as bees transferring it to the blossoms.
All right, Bob.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. While we're on the topic of blueberries, here's an email from Dee in Altamont. Blueberries not ripening. On two of my blueberry bushes, I had a good crop of blueberries in early July. Now there are still many berries that have not ripened. Can I do anything now to get them to ripen?
Just have patience. They will.
Okay.
I always like the fact that they string themselves out, and in a specific cluster, the blueberry blossoms in the spring take quite a while to open within a cluster. So you might have some opening on May 10th and others May 20th and others May 30th. So those are going to ripen at different times as well. Mm. And it's one of the reasons that you can have a nice long blueberry season. If it wasn't so hot this year, we would normally have a 10-week season on our blueberries. Mm. And it's because they are strung out for ripening like that. So have patience and include and enjoy your late blueberries.
Number here is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. We have Dale Isla Riggs from the Berry Patch, Fred Breglia from the Landis Arboretum, and Bob Graves from Fadigan's Nursery. And now we'll go back to our friend Joan. Joan in Schenectady, you're on.
Thanks, Ray, and hello to all my friends. How are y'all?
Hello, hello.
Great.
Hello. Good. Okay, I'm going to give up on some of my veggie production attempts. Okay. I can grow vegetables, but not in a half-shaded little lot that I have. Especially with all the people that grow such good veggies around here. Anyway, thank you. And so I wanted to go back to, I love perennials. I love especially useful perennials. I know a lot of the European species and especially medicinal uses. So I have a few of those. I would like to learn more native perennials up to small shrub size or biennials that like to establish, like a chamomile will. Mm-hmm. What do you think I might go back to?
Oh, boy. I'd have to research that one a little bit. Too bad Greg isn't here. He'd be great so, on that one.
Oh, Greg's not here. Yeah. You're right. He didn't show up. Okay. Well, next time.
Yeah, so you're looking to add more perennials that kind of get wild, like chamomile, can kind of spread out like that?
Yeah, I can contain biennials that do like to spread within reason. But I'm thinking of what other native plants will come back for me that I can get in the habit of harvesting either for medicine uses or even food uses.
You know what would be a great resource would be the shakers.
That's true.
The shakers?
Yeah.
Hancock Shaker Village
would mm-hmm. be a wonderful yep. resource yep. for that.
Yeah, because they're dealing with a lot of that.
And they have those gardens right there.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
So yep. that would be
not too far
one.
From the Berry Patch. So yeah. Double duty.
There you go.
make it a full afternoon. No, make it a day and a half. I know me. Okay. Yeah.
two perennials that come to my mind, certainly echinacea or coneflower mm-hmm. is one of them.
Working on that.
And yarrow would also be another one.
What's that?
Yarrow is native?
There is a native yarrow.
Yes.
What is yarrow?
It's
very feathery flower.
Oh, really?
Very fragrant.
Okay.
Tufts of flowers on the end.
I think some people
pretty
are
tough plants.
And they dry really well.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, another one, which is not, you may already have this, would be ferns, ostrich fern in particular.
Yeah,
it does really, really well.
She's got shade,
and those are the ones that you harvest for fiddleheads, and boy, oh boy, those are
right.
good. So I get those every year generally, but planting those, they do so well if you have some shade and some moisture.
Great.
After a short amount of time, you might say, "Well, I got too many of these," and I start to give them away. Mm. But they're not going to take over your yard. They form a nice bulb, and I always say when you harvest fiddleheads, to get them to come every single year, make sure you're always leaving two of the little pre-unrolled fronds, so two of those little fiddleheads.
Yeah.
So if you got like six or seven on a bulb, take six, leave two on every bulb.
Right. And the critters always won't eat them?
Generally, there's not much that eats those guys. And once they unfurl, and you'll have big, little ornamental, so you can eat them and you get an ornamental.
Yeah.
Another one's hosta.
Right.
Hosta actually is an incredible edible. And it was actually, it's actually considered the way that we consider asparagus around here in Asia. It's a spring edible like that. And when most of the hostas came from Asia, so there's no native hosta. So this is not native, but they were brought over so long that they've actually started to naturalize.
Huh.
And all varieties are edible, and they all taste a little different. Now, the big green ones have more of a lettucey taste. There are other ones that have a bit more of a spice to them. You could take the shoots, and the same thing I say with the fiddleheads, leave some shoots alone so it becomes your plant. And if you miss the shoots, They just cook up. You saute them really good. Oh. You can eat them raw, but they work really well. But if you miss the shoots, or if you want to spice up, you know, a garden salad, you can add some of the leaves, and you can even use some of the flowers. I'm going to bring some flowers in for Ray.
So.
Oh, terrific. Hey, Joan, we got to let you go here, but thank you very much. 800-348-2551 is the number. We have a ton of ferns this year. I mean, so many just popping up everywhere in our backyard.
It's been great growing weather.
Yeah, it's great conditions for them, but only one of them are around here that we use for edible.
Oh,
the rest of them are all toxic.
Here's a newsflash. I don't plan to.
Okay.
You know,
I was going to say,
deer
just make
seem
sure
to
it's
like,
ostrich.
Like all this stuff.
Yep. And that's why also, if you know, people always say, something's eating my hosta. There's a reason for that.
Yeah.
Because they're edible. They're good.
We have a lot of hosta, too.
Yep.
All right. Let's go to Queensbury and Cole, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm having trouble with my tomatoes. Something is eating the bottom of the tomato as soon as it starts getting red, and then it eats all the inside out of the tomato and leaves the case hanging there on the vine. And I can't figure out what it is or what I should do about it.
How close are the tomato fruit to the ground?
Fairly close. Not on the ground, but up, you know, maybe 6-8 inches.
So my thought is a mouse or a chipmunk. We've had those in our greenhouse eating our tomatoes, and they will do that. Another thing could be some tomato hornworms tend to be near the top of the plant, so it's probably not that. But there are some other insects. Though it is actually considered to be a corn borer, will also go after tomatoes. But if they're relatively close to the ground, there's a really good crop of chipmunks out there again this year.
Yes, there
and
are.
Yep. I've been getting a lot of reports from our customers complaining about the chipmunks eating their tomatoes.
There are more little furry creatures in the world than there used to be.
I don't see many chipmunks around my house. I do see a lot of mice when I'm mowing the lawn. I got a big lawn.
Voles could do it.
Yeah, voles as mice well. And voles.
Yep.
All right. Cole, thank you.
All right, so mouse traps out there?
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
If you wanted to, wanted to invest in a small trail cam, you could put it up near where the plants are. I always say it's a good way to, you know, to rule out, you know, anything
else. It would have
to
be very low to the ground to get the vole.
Yeah,
trail
it can.
To catch those.
Yeah, it does. It does. We get them.
You get them.
Yeah, you get them.
I might try that. That's a good suggestion. I'd be interested just to see it.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, you know, you never know what you're going to catch on those. So it's there. Have some fun with them. But, you know, you'll definitely know what it is. Put it down low. There's some that have infrared, so they don't send the light. I prefer the ones that do not have any light. It's just they're shooting.
You're serious about this.
I'm pretty serious about this.
Okay.
Yeah, I use a lot of them.
All right, let's grab one more call, then we'll take a break, and then we'll check the email bag here for a few. 800-348-2551 is the number. Let's go to Hudson, and it's Sue's turn. Sue, you're on.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, pretty good. How about you?
I'm good. Okay, I have a crab apple tree, and it's pretty old. It's probably 25 years old. It has that scab, I guess they call it, the fungus.
It's an apple
scab. I've been treating it over the years with a systemic fungicide, and I did spray it for a while, but it didn't. It got too big, and I couldn't get to the top of it. The flowers bloom in the spring, but then it looks pretty bad after that, and it's lost most of its leaves already now.
Yep.
Is this something? Is this a losing battle that I'm fighting, or?
Yeah, pretty much.
There's something else I could do.
Yeah, well, you know, yes and no. Yes, it's, you know, always going to come back. You know, if you really wanted to treat it, there are systemics you can inject the trees with. That would be a spring application. Mm-hmm. So now it wouldn't do anything now, but it'd be a preventative, the way that we often say that. But it does seem to keep them pretty good. Are you going to still get some scab? Yes. Are you going to get it as bad as you got it now? No.
A lot of older varieties have become more and more susceptible. Crab apples that we sold 30, 40 years ago, we just don't sell anymore.
That's correct.
It's so bad.
Yep.
Particularly when you have weather like we have.
Okay.
It's all a matter of wet.
It is.
Wet, or if it's humid, you're going to get it.
Yeah. And this year it's you know, exemplary for it. So one thing you can do to help reduce it, and, you know, if you rake your lawn, or if you have a rake and you want to be vigilant about this, you could start to rake those leaves up and don't compost them. Get them off your site, because what's happening is the leaves drop and next year's inoculum is sitting on that leaf, the spores for next year's infection. So if you reduce the amount of leaves that, you know, that stay on the ground, you reduce the amount of spores that can get your tree. And it usually takes 2 to 3 years to break that cycle. If you do mow your lawn and you have the option to bag, generally, I like to recycle any of the mowings, the clippings, back to the ground. But around those trees, if you had an option for a bagger, you would just bag the stuff just around those trees. And, you know, it would reduce the amount of infection. The good news about all this is that it's not going to hurt your tree, as you see. It gets it every year. And, boy, it does look good in the spring.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would also, you know, not fertilize it too much. I don't know if you drop fertilizer, but fertilization can actually increase, in some cases, diseases and insect attacks. And in this case, you know, giving it a lot more nitrogen, especially if you fertilized your lawn with fertilizer, it would be fertilizing the tree. That would make it more susceptible. So if you are doing that, I would say stop. And then try to get those leaves out. And if you really don't like to see it that way, there is a systemic injections that can be done, just the way we get injections into our vascular tissue. They do that to trees as well.
Sue, thanks for the call. We'll take a break at this moment. We'll check the email bag in a moment. The number here is 800-348-2551. Gardening Today with Fred, Dale Isla, and Bob. We'll be back. Fox Pop on WAMC. It's Gardening Today with Fred Breglia from Landis Arboretum, Dale Isla Riggs from the Berry Patch, and Bob Graves from Fadigan's Nursery. Which one of the melons is this one, the orange one here, Dale Isla?
That one is called Sugar Rush.
Okay, it's so amazing.
Yes.
It's so amazing.
They named it well.
And this one is called the lighter one?
That is Sensation.
They are all good.
Yeah, really, really
all good. Mm.
Okay.
It's melon season is a wonderful thing.
They are all different.
All different. Yeah, this Italian one, that has got a real flavor to it.
Forget about it. All right. This is from Nick. My cucumber was doing splendidly, and I got a few juicy ones. A few weeks ago, it started shriveling from the bottom. I think the morning glory is several feet away are the reason. They don't block the cucumber sun, but I feel like because they're both vines, they're going for the same nutrients. What's happening?
I am more inclined to think that it's probably some cucumber beetle spreading bacterial wilt. And so those, the vine crops, the cucumbers, melons, squash, are all quite susceptible to cucumber beetle. And that spreads bacterial wilt, a bacteria, when it's feeding on the plant.
Okay. Tom from Endicott wrote in about crabgrass. We covered that pretty well. It's a bad season for crabgrass.
It's a bad crabgrass.
Yep. The liquid stuff, he says, doesn't work too well.
Nope.
So.
And we recommend that pre-emergent in the spring prior to growth to stop it from germinating since it's annual.
And usually it's better now if you do that twice.
Okay.
Because crabgrass germinates over a greater period of time than it used to because our weather's so unusual.
So you put down a pre-emergent, and then what, two weeks later?
April, and a month later, 6 weeks later, do it again.
Okay.
All right, this is from James in Smallwood, New York. Happy rainy August day, says James. Well, same to you. Hey, I've noticed that the apparently dead patches of old moss on rocks in my garden are suddenly beginning to sprout green heads on them. Must be something cyclical, What are the life stages of moss, and how do they propagate?
Yeah, well,
that's because it's been wet.
I was going to say it's been getting too dry, and now with all this increased moisture, it's exactly what it wants.
Moss is really amazing stuff. It'll sit there almost dormant if it's dry, and then if it rains, it just turns off awesome green.
Grass has that ability too.
Yeah, sure it does.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've seen people with some real bad droughts. The whole lawn goes brown.
Comes back.
They think they need to reseed the whole place. I said, just turn water on.
Wait.
You get it.
Yeah.
Turn some water on, and it comes back. So it can stay under dormant state for a long time.
Okay. We have so many emails here that we'll just do a couple
quick
more.
Round.
And I apologize to everybody we don't get to, but there are a lot of calls here we got to get back to as well. Matt writes, for many years I've been putting out pots of calla lilies and bringing them inside for the winter. looks like they have proliferated and have outgrown the pots and need to be divided and replanted in more containers. When's the best time to do this, fall or spring?
I'd be doing that in the fall, I think. Wouldn't you?
Yeah, fall or
well, you could do it either
spring,
way. Whenever they're not actively growing.
When they're not actively growing, is
right.
The main thing.
I kind of like to let things get stored during the wintertime and then just before they start to grow in the spring, see what made it through the winter. And
especially if they're in pots. Sometimes when things are in the ground, it's easier to do them in the fall because sometimes you don't get to it in the spring if it breaks early. But if they're in pots, you can do it anytime.
Yeah.
Really.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. And this is from another Joan, and then we'll go back to the phones. Joan writes, where to plant a replacement tree? The tree service that has been caring for our 70-plus-year-old sugar maple has advised that her time is up. We plan to have her taken down at the end of the summer. The tree was planted in the best spot to shade the southwest side of our house. How close to that spot might we plant a new tree?
So you can go real close. Just, you know, generally speaking, I'd say, you know, you don't stump grinding, you can do it if you want. What we usually do at the Arboretum is we just sort of dig around a stump and then we cut it at grade. And then we rake a little soil around it and throw some seed and you never see it. But you can plant on the front, back, the left, the right, front, or back side of that stump. And you can go right up to it, generally, you know, within a couple of feet.
It's really a matter of where you can dig a hole.
Yeah. As soon as
The tree doesn't care. The new one doesn't care that there was an old one there. But you got to get it in the ground.
Yeah.
Yep. So, you know, as close as you can get it and still get a hole. And if you do have to cut some of those roots that you see coming in, that's okay.
Try not
to plant it any deeper than the grade you're dealing with. And the good news is with an old stump like that, I always say, you know, you're probably good for 15 years of no fertilization because that rotted stump will just continuously slow feed organics to it for years. So anytime I planted near an old stump, I've seen really healthy young trees that get bigger faster because there's just a lot of organics.
We had a couple of huge trees that were struck by lightning, you know, 15, 16, 17, 18, I don't know, a long time ago.
Yep.
And we had them cut down, and we had the grinding done.
Yep.
Got some tremendous mushrooms out of those things.
I believe it.
But, and I said, I mean, they were huge, and they looked like they were the expensive kind. And I'm not a huge mushroom buff, but I said, okay, well, let's look into this. And I looked them up, and next day, they were gone.
It's nice how that.
Yeah.
Yep. So if they were big and they were gone the next day, most likely something ate them.
So you wasn't my neighbor stealing them?
You got deer in your yard?
Oh, yeah.
Deer love mushrooms.
Do they? Do they really?
Yeah, I found morels this past year, a patch of them, just beautiful, big ones.
Yeah.
And I'd say that I got there a few days too late. I counted about 30 on this one tree alone, big ones. And I think there was only about 5 that were not topped
off
with deer.
It's so crazy.
They had gotten to them. They had a really, you know, they got most of them. So I didn't feel guilty about taking the rest.
All right, let's go back to the phones here. Windsor, Massachusetts is the place. Stu is the fellow. Stu, go ahead.
Yes. More than 5 years ago, I planted Jerusalem artichoke. And they have never had flowers. One of my reasons for planting them is because I wanted to see the flowers out in front of my house. And so I'm wondering if this is because of the variety of Jerusalem artichoke or if there's something that should be done differently to get flowers on the top of these.
The first thing I think is it getting a lot of sun or is it getting a lot of shade?
One area where I planted them has no shading.
Oh. Because they do like more sun than shade, I was going to say. So shade will often do that.
Well, this is an area with plenty of sun.
Delilah.
Yeah, all I can think of is that do you know how much organic matter is in that area? I wonder if they're actually getting too much nitrogen.
I don't know anything about the content of nutrients in the soil in the location. I was cautioned that they would spread and not to plant them near, you know, a garden that I have perennial things.
Correct.
So,
correct,
right.
For sure. Yeah.
So I dug up a part of the lawn and put them there. So if they start spreading and I don't like it, I can mow them over.
Got it.
Okay.
Got it. Yeah.
So there's a chance if you put them in what was lawn before, you probably have quite a bit of organic matter in there from the sod. And so they might be getting a little too much nitrogen so that they're not producing flowers. If it's something that you really care about, I always recommend a soil test. And that will let you figure out if there's something, there might be something lacking that they're not getting enough of.
A lot of times when the soil's too rich, plants sort of skip flowering. In a right. sense, they'll go to flower if they feel stressed yep. or there's a potential that they're going to be damaged somehow. So if it's too rich in some respects, even in trees and shrubs, they'll do that. That's they just true. Don't flower. They yep. just grow like mad.
Yeah, right. they focus on vegetative growth.
They're vegetative, yeah. Yep. You
know, so it could be that. And it also could be that, you know, if you've never seen a flower, it is possible that maybe they are a different variety. And maybe, you
yeah.
know,
that's true.
You know, might not yeah. be the right one for around here.
Right, you know. Right. So there's a chance all of that. Right. Maybe the winter bud, I mean, well, it's not really happening. There's no winter bud, so it dies back. So it wouldn't be that. And
okay.
A little bit odd.
Well, Stu, thanks for the call. Now let's go to Amherst. Rose has been waiting a half an hour. Hello, Rose. You're on. Uh-oh.
Hi. Oh, yeah. I have a peach tree that I planted about, 12, 14 years ago, and it's, 10 feet tall and diameter of like 20 feet, good solid branches. And about a week ago, three branches that were good size, about the size of your wrist or around, and they just broke. And I don't know if it was just a windstorm. I didn't see any of the other trees in my yard have that. Is there something nutrient-wise I need to do?
Yep. They tend to be a little weak-wooded, don't they, Fred, the peaches?
They are a little brittle. They are a little weak-wooded. What happens a lot of times with plants is in spots where you're planting them, like urbanized spots, landscapes, not forests, plants tend to want to put out larger aspect ratio branches on the sides as compared to the trunk. So if you look at the trunk, you want to see branches on trees much smaller than the diameter of the trunk. And trees that are planted in urban sites, if you don't prune them, they naturally want to form large codominants or large sized branches, large aspect ratio branches compared to the trunk. And that's just a recipe for breakage. So when we prune plants, especially fruit trees that hold fruit, we tend to want to reduce branches that are taking over the top or looking like they might be the same size as the trunk or getting closer to the size of that trunk. And we reduce them as in we cut them back a bit to a lateral. And what that does is it slows down the growth on those branches and it puts more growth in the trunk so that the branches are smaller and the trunk is fatter. And plants like that generally don't break apart during snow loads, wind loads, or even calm sunny days. But trees that have larger aspect ratio branches tend to be more prone to breakage. So I suspect that if we looked at this tree, you would see branches that are fairly large in relation to the trunk, maybe half the size or larger. And if that's the case, pruning, could solve some of that, prevent that from happening.
You're really looking for a strong architecture in fruit trees. You've got to get, you got to trim them back to minimize the amount of weight that they're trying to support.
Yep. If those branches are small in relation to the trunk, they generally don't break. So that's my guess.
All right, Rose, thanks a lot. To New Scotland we go, and it's Tom's turn. Tom, you're on.
Hi. I have a lilac that's old, at least 30-plus years, and the leaves are shriveled and brown. It's almost like a blight.
Yep. It is. And It's not going to be a problem. It's just perfect storm conditions this year for fungal issues. So I've got lilacs in front of our house, and
they're almost defoliated. At this point.
Yeah, they have been.
If you look on the stems, you're going to see nice green buds. It's going to come back next year.
Yeah, it's going to come back really good. But this year is just really. Okay. It's going to look. There's nothing you can do now, but just leave it alone. But it will come back.
You might want to do on an older lilac though is trim some of the oldest growth out because they will rejuvenate themselves if you do.
Okay.
And you tend to get lilac borer if you don't trim out some of that older stuff.
That's true. And you might have some of that in there too. And if you did have borer, you'd see holes down the lower part of those stems. Most borers are really, really bad. They'll take the whole plant out. But luckily with lilac borer, it does favor the older stems, so you don't lose the younger growth generally. And the time for pruning them would not be now. It would be it would be depending right after they bloom, or if you're looking for more of rejuvenation on some of these really old ones, it would be actually before before bud break. But right. it wouldn't be now.
Tom, thanks a lot. Now we'll go to Syracuse. Cindy, you're on.
Hello, Cindy.
Hello, Cindy. Are you there?
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead. Yes, go.
Hi. Okay, back to the mice and chipmunk problem. There's so many of them this year, like we've never seen before. And especially the chipmunks, they're like, they ruin some of my prized petunias. They're digging the bulbs up and eating those. They're up in our vehicles. It's just been crazy. And we live rural, and I have a big yard with a lot of grass, and so... Is there anything that I might be able to sprinkle down in the grass that they don't like and maybe deter them or make them leave and go somewhere else?
Thank you. There are repellents that you can get, and a lot of them are, you know, combination of oils or rotten egg or garlic or something like that.
Yeah.
But if they're having a good time, they're hard to get them to go
it's
away.
It's a party, yeah.
Maybe, you know, some like hot pepper, cayenne pepper, habanero, if they make a powdered habanero.
You have to keep putting it down all the time.
You can use
really?
For cooking,
really?
They're easy.
Although hot pepper does deter them, but it's a constant. It's a constant application
because
they're, you know, it's going to keep them away when they go there. Ooh, it's bad. But then
pre-seasoning the chipmunks for the
for the rotisserie. That's another way to look at it.
all right, this email from Fedora who says,
you're the one that said that, not me.
Both our nectarine and peach trees had early leaf curl, which somehow disappeared. Both looked healthy for a while, but since then, both show damage from insects, maybe another fungus. I radically pruned the peach of hundreds of sick or small or overloaded fruits and branches and remove them daily, and it may be okay. Also sprayed with Captain Jack's fruit tree spray, neem oil, she says, which may have helped. But the nectarine had plenty of fruit, also somewhat affected, but suddenly everything on it turned to mummies overnight. Almost every branch shows weird effects. Question, should I now radically prune the nectarine? The two trees didn't quite touch, but they are quite close. I'm afraid of overpruning. And that's from Fedora.
Oh, dear. That's weather related again.
Yeah, sounds like brown rot got into the fruit. Yep. And when brown rot, just like gray mold on strawberries, brown rot will go after peaches. And in weather like what we've been having, it just blossoms overnight. And it can literally envelop a fruit overnight.
You know, to prevent that, you're probably going to spray more than you want to. You know, it's just, it's hard to keep up with that.
Yeah, when it's conditions are like this year.
Well, when it's like this, it's really hard. Yeah.
Pruning it off, though, isn't going to really solve it.
No.
You know, so that's
it's not bad to prune, but it's not going to solve that problem.
No, no. And it should come back next year. You know, everything should look good again, as long as the conditions aren't similar to this one. You know?
Who knows?
All right. Now, do you think, panel, we can answer a question in 30 seconds, or is it not worth it?
I think it's worth it.
All right. Zach, the engineer, usually feels it's not worth it, but let's do it. Andrew in Clifton Park, it's got to be super quick.
Splitting or propagating rhododendrons, and also I feel like I have maybe like a leaf hopper issue, but at the tops of some of the plants in my garden, they look like Swiss cheese. They've been eating tons of holes in it, I'll just take my answer off the phone.
All right, 15 seconds, panel. What do you think?
If it's rhododendron, it could be a weevil, and that's something you treat the soil for. I wouldn't split rhododendrons. I'd layer them. If you want to look up the process called layering, that's the way to propagate that one the easiest.
Yeah, and if you wanted to transplant them, very easy to move rhododendrons.
All right.
Yeah. It's definitely not leafhopper. That's not the type of damage that it does.
No. Okay, so that was very succinct, all. Dale Isla, how do people find the Berry Patch?
TheBerryPatch.net.
No, that was really good. Fred, the Landis Arboretum.
Yep, landisarboretum.org and 174 Lake Road in Esperance.
Bob Graves. I almost called you Bob Ward. old comment.
Fattigan's Nursery. We're on Troy Schenectady Road, just west of the road that goes to the Albany Airport.
Well, and we're on Route 22 in Steventown.
That's the Berry Patch. Well, thank you all for being here. And Dale Isla, thanks for the lovely melons. Delicious. Support comes from Sapbush Hollow Farm, Meat CSA and Seasonal Cafe in Schoharie County, grass-fed and pasture-raised meats by the cut, wholes, halves, and quarters, or monthly subscriptions, sapbushfarmstore.com for orders. Woodland Pond at New Paltz, a life plan community at the foot of the Schwungunks, near education, the arts, and outdoor activities. future residency waitlist available, woodlandpondnp.org. And Asia Barong Gallery, Great Barrington campus includes Asian Sculpture Park, Furniture Showroom, and Ethnographic Art Gallery, China, Japan, Korea, India, Southeast Asia, asiabarong.com. Once again, thanks to Fred, Bob, and Dale Isla for being here today. Thanks for listening. Many apologies. So many people left on the line. So many emails we didn't get to. You'll be back in 2 weeks, folks. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer, and Susie Chekai, who screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on the show, it's Food Friday. We welcome John Fisher from the Culinary Institute and Anton Kinlock from the Lone Wolf in Kingston. It's a summer cocktail show. We'll see you tomorrow at 2:00.